Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
All financed by the United States taxpayer, or I should say the United States taxpayers and the people of the world who the United States of America holds to ransom with its armed forces and its inflated dollar and its bogus financial system.
Thus, the voice of longtime broadcaster and journalist Charles Borland. On this week's show, we speak to Charles about the unfolding tragedy in Palestine and what we as ordinary citizens can do to put an end to this terrible injustice. The Israeli war, or should I say massacre, on Gaza enters its 21st day. War planes today struck hospitals and a children's playground in a refugee camp. The death toll has reached 1,076, with over 6,500 injured. 30 civilians were killed this morning, 10 children. Online to talk about this, I have Charles Borland. Charles is a Canadian radio broadcaster and journalist. He produced Wake Up with Co-op for many years and still produces the show Discussion on CFRO 100.5 FM, a Vancouver Cooperative Radio. Welcome to the show, Charles.
Thanks, Stuart. And as you say, it's a grim, dreadful time that such perfidy, such outright murder of innocent civilians can take place, and the entire so-called international community is sitting on their hands, the U.S. in particular, of course, financing the Israeli state. And, of course, the Israeli state is its creature from the get-go. British and the Americans created this Zionist entity back in 1947 to build a base there in the Arab homelands, to block their effort to renew themselves, to control their lives, and so on. And we've seen how bloody and awful the wars of aggression against those Arab peoples has been over that period of time.
Charles, let's dig into that. Let's talk about the dismal, or could you say even immoral, coverage of this conflict. We hear daily that Hamas broke the ceasefire. Israel has only responded to Hamas rockets. Israel has a right to protect itself. Can you demystify this coverage? What's happening on the ground in Gaza? Can you paint a picture for us?
Well, yeah. I mean, first off, that we ought to know what Hamas's terms are for a ceasefire, and if you think about the terms, you can't conclude anything, but they're entirely just and reasonable. They've written a letter to the United States, to the members of the Arab League and other governments involved in negotiations, and they've outlined their conditions quite clearly, and they are, number one, open the borders for freedom of movement for Gazan residents. In other words, end the seven-year-long imprisonment of that 1.8 million people in that tiny sliver of land called Gaza, and to allow a trade and cross-border activity. So they want the opening of the Rafah crossing in coordination with Egypt and the Palestinian Authority. In addition to that, they demanded that the prisoners who had been released in the Gilad Shalit prisoner exchange deal during Israel's Operation Brothers Keeper, they rearrested all those people. So they were freed, and then they were rearrested. And they were rearrested in this whole hysteria that Israel created following the kidnap and murder of those three Israeli teenagers. Then another demand they have is the carrying out of the fourth prisoner release, which had been scheduled, but which Israel refused to do. They also demand permitting Gazan fishermen to sail up to 12 nautical miles from shore to carry on fishing in order to earn a livelihood for their families. And they want to enable the freedom of movement for Palestinians in currently restricted corridors, including the agricultural areas along the Strip's border. And Hamas and the Palestinian Authority together are demanding an international committee be set up to guarantee an implementation of the agreement. And they've made it very clear, I can quote the Hamas leader, the elected leader of the Gazan government, Khalid Mishal. He said, quote, "We will not accept any initiative that does not lift the blockade on our people and that does not respect their sacrifices. And he made that statement on July 13th in an interview. And he pointed out, and I quote him again, "The years of blockade have killed more of our people than have the wars." And he pointed out that Hamas does not wish for war, but he has reiterated on several occasions that Hamas will not yield unless their conditions for a ceasefire are met. Now, we have to reflect here, pause here, and reflect, is this demand unreasonable or unjust? To my mind, I think to the mind of any person who were to even understand what Hamas's demands were, because the media does not broadcast those demands. They do not explore the reasons why Hamas rejected that earlier proposal for a ceasefire that Egypt brokered with Israel. It was a setup, really, to basically bulldoze over the demand of Hamas and the people in Gaza. The key demand is to lift that seven-year blockade. And as he said in one part of his interview, he pointed out that our people are dying a slow death, and the wish of the people in Gaza is that either give us liberty or give us death. And I mean, that's a slogan we've heard before, and in different times and different circumstances, but that the key demand of the Hamas leadership of Gaza is that only when there is freedom of movement of Palestinians in and out of the Gaza Strip, and when those are guaranteed, and there's unlimited import and export of goods and unrestricted use of the Gaza seaport, then there would be a certain balance between the occupier and the occupied. So that's the demand. On the other hand, we have the Israeli arrogance, which is, frankly, an expression of desire to destroy the people, destroy their resistance, destroy any possibility of living a life in Gaza in order to depopulate the area. I think it's really important for us British Columbians, you know, to reflect about the situation in Gaza. Given our own circumstances in British Columbia, I made a speech on Friday at a rally in Vancouver down at the Art Gallery, and I pointed out that exactly 150 years ago, the governor of British Columbia oversaw, through his Attorney General, Justice Begbie, the mass hanging of five Tsilhqot'in chiefs for raising arms in resistance to what has been proven and documented to have been a planned, callous, calculated genocide, mass murder of hundreds of thousands of indigenous people all up the Pacific coast in order to clear the land, in order to break the legitimate claim to sovereignty these nations had established over their being here for hundreds and thousands of years. And that is more or less the same as what has happened to the people of Palestine, that these Europeans came, displaced their population, and herded them into these refugee camps, and now are systematically destroying the population in order to do what? Vacate the lands in order they can occupy them. So we have to go by what is in practice, not by what liars say repeatedly. Liars repeatedly tell us all kinds of stories as to why these native people died in British Columbia. But they are the lies told by people who have committed unspeakable crimes. You know, any people, any group of persons, any entity or state that commits genocide against another population, they will find ways to deny its existence. They will deny it. They will cover it up. They will lie about it. And we've seen this in case after case.
I just wanted to point out that Israel is naked in its aggression. I don't know how they can possibly justify bombing a hospital. Today they bombed a power plant, the only power plant in Gaza. Where's the international community? Where's the UN? They say they want it to stop, but nothing's changing. What will it take to stop this? First of all, where's the international community on this? And what will it take to stop this?
Well, I think for us to be sober-minded, Stuart, about the international community, we have to go back in history and we have to see how this Zionist entity, and I call it a Zionist entity because it's not a Jewish project. One should clear their heads about this. Judaism is a religion. Judaism is a religious belief, a religious system of belief that has been held by people for thousands of years. And people of different nationalities and different backgrounds have held this in different areas. And in fact, Jewish Palestinians lived alongside Muslim Palestinians, alongside Christian Palestinians, for hundreds of years under the Ottoman Empire and even before the Ottoman Empire was established. So we're not talking here about a project of a religious group. What we're talking about here is a political movement started in the late 19th century in Europe at a time when all the European powers were engaged in building empires, conquering other people's lands, the division of Africa in 1885 in Berlin being a classical example. The British Colonial Office had plans even back to the days of the construction of the Suez Canal to have a colony planted in Arab lands to keep them at bay, to keep them down. And the circumstances arose for that occasion after World War II, where this terrible slaughter, mass murder, mass industrial murder of people of Jewish faith, as well as communists and socialists and other occupied peoples, as well as the Romani people, over a million Romani people were murdered by the Nazis too. This circumstance created a situation where England and the United States could provide human beings to settle into Palestine from Europe because they had been displaced and immiserated by this terrible Nazi Holocaust. And in addition to that, they provided arms, they provided infrastructure, they provided all the possibilities to establish this entity. And they simply stole Palestinian land. Like, there's a very famous quote in a magazine called A Dossier on Palestine, Dossier on Palestine. And there's a wonderful quote. It says, and I'm reading from it, the first article by Dr. Ismail Zayed, who is a physician from Halifax, and he spoke in Vancouver way back in 1999. And in this article, he says, the Palestine-Israel conflict is frequently described as a very complex one. I want to submit to you that the problem is fundamentally a very simple one, which is summed up in the words of a simple Palestinian farmer in Jericho, quoted by the late Frank Epp, then president of Conrad Grebel College of the University of Waterloo, who told him, quote, our problem is very simple. A foreigner came and took our land, took our farms and our homes, and kicked us out. We have a mind to return. It may take 100 years, but we will return. End quote. That's the story here. And so when you say, where is the international community with respect to this horrific mass slaughter that's going on today? That international community is basically the system of imperialist states headed by the United States and Britain who designed and organized this Zionist political entity in Arab lands on the indigenous territory of the Palestinian people. So while they may wring their hands in public and go tisk tisk and make other, you know, gestures, they could in 30 seconds put an end to this war because they spend billions of dollars every year on this state. They finance the so-called dome. What is it called? The Iron Dome costs approximately $1 billion. Each one of those rockets they fire up costs $95,000. It's all financed by the United States taxpayers. Or I should say the United States taxpayers and the people of the world who the United States of America holds to ransom with its armed forces and its inflated dollar and its bogus financial system. So that's where they are. They are clearly in cahoots with this mass slaughter. And I dare say there are private armaments manufacturers and researchers and armaments people who are making fortunes out of the Israeli-U.S. military interconnect between the Israeli military-industrial complex and the United States military-industrial complex. And, of course, all these weapons have no practical function other than to destroy people and buildings, and that's what they're doing. They're using this hardware that they've amassed. And what is very upsetting, of course, Stuart, is that the people are not aroused enough. You know, there's an article I read recently in our press in the TML, and the person calls, she ends the article by saying, "May the world rise up to end the slaughter of your valiant people," speaking to the Palestinians. Of course, many people have risen up. There's no doubt to my mind, Stuart, that in international public opinion, the Canadian working class and people, while they may not know the whole story clearly, they are disgusted with this mass murder. That the Canadian people are not for it. They may turn their backs to it. They may get bulldozed by the mass media hype about Hamas hiding behind children, which is a filthy lie. That's not how they fight. How can you wage a guerrilla warfare by hiding, running around behind some kid? It's just so absurd. It's absurd on the face of it, you know. But these warriors are taking their toll on the Israeli army. And they 50 Israeli soldiers or 48 soldiers apparently have died in this assault. And it's not even fair to call it a war. I noticed you used the word war at the beginning. It's not a war.
Yeah. To correct you, I said war/massacre.
Yeah, well, yeah, I don't think we should use the word war, because it's what really it is. It's an occupied people who are being assaulted and who, with very little means but a great deal of courage and selfless sacrifice, are resisting. They just will not permit the world to see that they are on their knees. They're not on their knees. They're fighting back as best they possibly can with bare hands, so to speak.
I just wanted to say, of course, I see this conflict as terribly unbalanced use of force against a population that's imprisoned, but I don't condone deaths on either side. I just want this to end. I just want this to come to a resolution. So how can civil society, Charles, how can we mobilize our forces to bring this to a equitable
end? That's a good practical question, Stuart. I do believe that those who have called the demonstrations in Vancouver, if I had a chance to have a conversation with them, I would encourage them to knock on the doors of the trade unions, knock on the doors of other organizations, knock on the doors of the Jewish community, who are not swept up with Zionist fervor, but who are peace-loving people, who are justice-loving people, and put that call out there for all justice-minded, freedom-loving people to take a stand with this occupied population in Gaza who are resisting. Personally, I will never criticize the Palestinian, even one breath, for their resistance with armed force. In fact, in law, Stuart, and this is very important, this law was established in World War II, in the aftermath of World War II. My parents' generation put heroes' medals on all those in occupied Europe, occupied by the German Nazis, who fought against them with hand grenades and pistols and rifles and what explosive and whatever they had at hand. And they fought them heroically, like Hamas is doing. And we called those people heroes, and we decorated them, and we called them the resistance. And that is what is waging armed struggle in Gaza on behalf of the Gazan people, in the same way the French resistance was waging resistance on behalf of the French people, or the Warsaw Ghetto was waging resistance against the Nazi hordes on behalf of the Polish nation, and so on, in occupied Russia, in Belarusia, in Ukraine, in all the areas, in Greece, the famous Greek resistance, the famous Italian resistance. These are the brigades of the people who we saluted. And I'm just mentioning Europe. I should mention Asia. We're on the Pacific coast here. What about the masses of Chinese people under Mao Zedong and other armies that fought against the Japanese occupiers in China? What about the Korean people who mobilized themselves with arms and waged heroic struggle against the Japanese occupation, which for 35 years had raped and pillaged the Korean peninsula for the profit of these Japanese capitalists? And, you know, we need to remind ourselves about these. This is my parents' generation. These are the young people's grandparents, you know. And this is not ancient history we're talking about here. So we call those resistors heroes, and we salute their resistance. And can we do less for the Palestinian heroes who are waging self, these young people who are waging self-sacrificing battle? And I don't care under what slogans they are waging their war. They are resisting Israeli aggression. That's all we need to know. And in law, in international law, and this is very, very important, the occupier is not equal to the occupied. They do not consider in law the Israeli occupation and occupiers the same as the Palestinians. Palestinians, the occupied, have in law the right to resist. Occupiers do not have the right to settle their population on occupied territory. All the settlements in the West Bank are illegal. The wall was declared illegal by the court in The Hague. We forget about that. We don't want to talk about it. The media doesn't want to talk about that. The court in The Hague analyzed what the wall was about, and they said it's illegal. It has to be taken down. It's a violation of international law. Right. So you see, when you say, where is the international community? The international community is feeding a world of anarchy. It's feeding a world to flout the law, to defy the law, and to impose anarchy on the peoples, whether it's in Palestine or in Iraq or in Syria or in any number of places we can, in Libya, any number of places we can name where NATO and the United States and these forces who are backing the Israelis have likewise committed crimes against others. That's the dreadful time we live in, unfortunately, Stuart.
I just want to amplify a point you made, and that is there is a global civil society that's against war, and there was a peace process right inside Israel when this started. And just as in the United States in the war in Iraq, there was many millions of peace-loving Americans who did not want to be dragged into that conflict, which was a disaster. So we only have a couple minutes left, Charles.
Right.
What thought do you want to leave our listeners with who might be watching this unfold in television and feel so helpless? What one thing would you hope that people would do to make this world a more peaceful place and to bring some sanity to international relations?
Well, I think everybody should take some practical step to express a deep criticism of the Harper government, denounce the Harper government, condemn it either with letters or whatever is available to people, or to take a step to come to a demonstration, to a rally, to take an act, to go onto the internet and look for some analytical and historical approach. I would recommend having a look at the paper that I was quoting from a little bit earlier. It's called the TML. You can find it at cpcml.ca. There are many practical things that people can do, both for informing themselves and to take a stand. We need to take a stand with the Palestinian resistance, demand an end to the siege of Gaza, demand a return of the prisoners, and to stop the killing and end the occupation. I don't know what else we can do. We have to mobilize ourselves and be active. And I congratulate you, Stuart, for taking the time and making the effort to bringing some of these views forward in your radio broadcast. That's an act for which I applaud.
And one final thought, Charles. Many of our listeners will be in America. Our show airs on many U.S. stations. What message do you have to the American people about this conflict?
Well, there's a big demonstration coming up in Washington on August the 2nd. There have been demonstrations throughout the United States of America. I greet our U.S. brothers and sisters with enthusiasm. I do hold great hope in the U.S. working class, the youth, the broad masses of the African-American and the Spanish-speaking America to stand up, all of the masses of the United States of America to stand up and work themselves to build a country that is democratic, profoundly democratic, and block this empire that has been built on their backs and built on the backs of humanity. It is the most dangerous empire facing humanity, and they are the main suppliers and defenders of Israel. So I wish them all well. I embrace them and encourage them to take action.
And I thank you, Charles, for your time that you spent with me. I know you're very busy. Charles, briefly tell our listeners how they can listen into discussion.
Well, they can hear discussion on the Internet. You can go to Co-op Radio, coopradio.org, and then you can listen live. We broadcast every Wednesday evening between 7 and 8 p.m. Wednesday evening, 7 and 8 p.m. And we'll certainly be talking about the situation in Palestine.
Thank you so much for spending a few moments with me, Charles.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
We have come to the end of our program. Latin Waves is a weekly syndicated program available to campus and community radios. Please visit our website, www.latinwavesmedia.com, to hear previous shows, connect to our media projects, and access other resources, or to support our efforts by making a safe PayPal contribution. I am Sylvia Richardson. Thanks for listening.